Welcome back to Veritas. I'm the Hustle Rick, and my special guest today is Michelle Gibson. And Michelle, you have something to discuss that I couldn't put in part one, but it has a lot to do with health. And, you know, I started this platform in 2008 discussing UFOs. But as people know, as time went by, more doors opened, and it's incredible how everything is interconnected, especially health, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds. There is this web of mystery, or not, it's not mysterious anymore. But when it comes to health, is this part of the Great Reset to keep people dumbed down, to keep people's longevity short? Why don't you start? You had something to say about the book Paradise Lost.
Yeah, I do. And thank you, Mel. And I go into detail about what we're going to be talking about in a blog post recently posted called Counting the Ways You Need to Know What You're Consuming. And I have a video of the same name on my YouTube channel. And just a little bit of background into how I was brought into this recently is I got an email from a viewer just asking for help to putting together a video about Gossypol to get the word out about what is in our food supply chain. And Gossypol is a toxic.
Spell that for the listeners, please. Spell that for the listener. Yes, please.
It's spelled Gossypol. And she and her family are farmers. And in the winter, they subsistence hunt wild hogs. And they only get what they need for their meat for the wintertime. So she received word from local authorities about a hog abatement program that was going to be implemented where she lives in central Texas, of a compound that involves Gossypol called Hogstop. It's a hog abatement program that ends up sterilizing the male pigs. And she wasn't getting a straight answer from anywhere. And so she decided to do her own research. And she fell deep down into the rabbit hole and really wanted to get the word out because nobody was either willing or able to answer her question about whether or not there was secondary transfer of the cottonseed oil and Gossypol in the hogs and into humans. And she said she was even able to find out how bad this was for the masses. And she shared her research with me. And, you know, there's some really jaw-dropping revelations that are really tied to the here and now. But the research on this chemical as being anti-fertility as well as toxic goes back at least, you know, almost 100 years, probably longer. And I'm going to talk about that in just a moment. And that's been actively studied for its effects, its anti-fertility effects on people, not just people, but animals, by the World Health Organization, by the Rockefeller Foundation, by NIH. But they have been studying this, and they've been putting it in food, like in China, using cottonseed oil to cook. You know, that's a little bit of the history on it. Where it really comes to the fore is that in October of 2019, the FDA approved cottonseed oil or GMO cottonseed as a food for human and animal consumption with its known anti-fertility and toxic effects. Anybody, you know, put it anywhere. And it is definitely in our food supply. It's being used by restaurant chains and food products. They're using cottonseed oil, and it's not good for us. Not only is it not good for us, it came into FDA approval about the same time that the coronavirus or COVID-19 was coming in, about the exact same time. It, you know, that really hit in the late winter, early spring of 2020, and this gets approved in October 2019. So it really looks like a secret depopulation agent that's been surreptitiously inserted into our food supply. And we're talking big names. If, you know, and again, I have seen where other people have done research on the brands that have cottonseed oil in it. And I have not gone that extra step. But given the fact that the FDA has approved it, I'm not surprised. And there's some pretty big names mentioned, like KFC and Olive Garden and, you know, other foods
You should see my face of disappointment here, because sometimes I learn something new, and I think I'm a health nut, and I think after so many years of doing this, I pretty much know what's healthy and what's not healthy. But cottonseed oil was not one of them. I love anchovies, for example, and now I realize that all the anchovies come in a container full of cottonseed oil. Too bad.
Right. Cottonseed oil is not good for you. And when she got in touch with me, I was immediately piqued with interest, because when I was in the statuary hall not long ago doing research on former and assassinated Louisiana Governor Huey P. Long, who was an authoritarian and a socialist, another socialist. He called himself a populist, but he was a socialist. I encountered the information that he worked as a salesman before entering politics, and he met his wife, Rose, at a baking contest he promoted to sell cottonseed shortening. And the cottonseed shortening was made of beef suet and cottonseed oil that was first produced in the United States from 1868 until the early 20th century.
Was that the first replacement of lard?
Yes, that was the first one.
Okay.
And then Crisco shortening, which was a competitor, was also originally made entirely from cottonseed oil.
Which was used during wars to use as an oil for the bearings used in machinery.
And I got interested. This is a little aside, and I didn't include this in this article because I'm like, okay, I need to narrow my focus here. But I thought of the connection between the way the word cottonseed sounds and cottonelle toilet paper. And so I searched for cottonelle, and while I didn't see it listed in the ingredients of that toilet paper, I did see something that says, what are the ingredients of toilet paper? And it included chlorine and formaldehyde.
Wait, this is toilet paper? Yep. I have to add this, and I don't mean to continue interjecting, but if not, my thought's going to go away. And I meant lubrication when it comes to Crisco and all those things. Mm-hmm. But let me just say something about toilet paper. If I ever do a show that's kind of a comedy, it's people that send me things all the time, emails. I have one for the last 10 years. Somebody says, I think I have an idea. If I were one of the controllers, how would I affect every single human being in the world? By putting something on toilet paper. And I always thought, yeah, this is a great joke, right? But think about it. And what you just said, it just brings this to a non-comedy mode.
Right. So if you search cottonelle toilet paper ingredients, you go down, and again, it says the main component of our tissue and toilet paper products are, let me just see what they say. And this is just an example of how deep this goes. They don't want us in our current form. They want us in a modified form that they can control.
But when it comes to chlorine and so on, are you saying that maybe a lot of, cancers and I don't even need to bring this up to give any ideas, it's done through toilet paper?
Okay, so when I look up ingredients and purposes for cottonelle, there's no reference to those agents that I just mentioned. Okay, but if you keep scrolling down and it says people also ask, what is cottonelle toilet paper made of? Does cottonelle have chemicals? What's the healthiest toilet paper to use? If you look under,
I have it right here. Sodium chloride, butoxy, PEG4, many other names that I can't even pronounce. Polysorbate 20. What else? Caprylyl glycol, sodium benzoate. What else? Fragrance, perfume, sodium citrate, tocopherol acetate, and a bunch of others. Do you want that in your private parts?
Right. And I'm looking here. It says, what toilet paper has no formaldehyde? And it says a few brands making 100% unbleached toilet paper include Tushy and Plant Paper, both of which are made from bamboo and are packaged without any plastic. So it's saying that most toilet paper has formaldehyde.
Is this one of the reasons why
paper towels?
Speaking of the old world, I remember growing up with a bidet, and most of my family members had a bidet, and you hardly ever see that in this part of the world. You know what a bidet is, right?
Right, right.
So is this why we don't see that anymore? Because they don't want us to be naturally clean?
It could very well be. I mean, obviously, they've been very devious about that. And anyway, that was just something I stumbled on because Caudalene sounded like Cottonelle. And I went and looked and I thought, okay, this is TMI.
Sure.
But if you, again, for anybody that wants to look into it for yourself, it sure looks like it. And I remember formaldehyde from 10th grade biology when we were dissecting frogs.
Frogs.
And that's what they were. That's what they were preserved in. So that's my association for formaldehyde. Not something I want putting on my body. So anyway, getting back to this whole thing, the commissioner of the Texas Department of Agriculture released a press release on June 1st of 2021 regarding a new product in the fight against feral hogs. And in it, it talked about this product called Hogstop. And it was described as a new hog contraceptive bait entering the market that week. So first week of June in 2021 of curbing the growth of the feral hog population in Texas over time. And it was called an exciting new tool in the war against feral hogs. It went on to talk about all of the millions of dollars in damages that feral hogs cause and damages, and that this was an all natural contraceptive bait. Hogstop targets the male hog's ability to reproduce. The press release goes on to say that Hogstop does not have to be registered by the Texas Department of Agriculture because it is considered a 25B pesticide by the EPA, meaning that it is considered to be a pesticide that causes little harm to humans. So it doesn't have to be registered by the State Department of Agriculture. And when I looked under what is Hogstop and how do I use it, on the Hogstop website, it just says it's a mixture of ingredients commonly found in livestock feeds fed to feral hogs to reduce their numbers on your farm or ranch. And nowhere on there could I find a list of the actual ingredients. So when I searched for cottonseed oil, it didn't show up. Where I did find a place to find it was there was a forum on the Texas Hunting Forum talking about Gossypol and Hogstop, and there was a lot of information on there, including a way to find a PDF from HyProFeeds, the HyProFeeds website, where it shows that the active ingredients are include cottonseed oil. And it has a lot of warnings on it. like, let me look here. Harmful if swallowed. If it gets in your eyes, rinse them thoroughly. Keep out of reach of children. And then another really interesting thing about this, it shows that Hogstop is a registered trademark of Corona Feed Additives, LLC of New Mexico.
Corona.
Yep. And I didn't make that connection right away, and somebody left a comment saying, Corona, that's interesting. That's telling. So, again, I think this was just something they kind of rolled into this whole depopulation agenda that we've kind of been aware of, you know, those that have been more awake for a while. That they're quite serious about. And I found this on the same Texas Hunting Forum discussion, just linked to an article about cottonseed and fertility, where it says cottonseed contains toxics that harm male fertility, and that Gossypol, a potent male contraceptive found in cottonseed, may harm the Sertoli cells that are crucial for healthy sperm creation, and that it cited two Chinese studies that have looked at the relationship between cotton and infertility. And then with the other research that this viewer sent me that she did, you know, she really dove deep into that to find out that it's been studied, seriously studied by the Rockefeller Foundation. There was a 1983 President's Review and Annual Report of the Rockefeller Foundation that concerned a grant awarded for a fellowship through the Chinese Academy of Medical Sciences that established a molecular biology lab to find a way to use Gossypol to suppress sperm motility. That was in 1983. She found a Texas A&M University study from 2017 that showed, when it came right down to it, that that this was a real threat to human health. By a report showing that the contraceptive method they are using to get the hogstop into the wild pig population that it's not supported by research as a feasible alternative in wild pig management, that secondary transfer can potentially happen, and that kind of thing. So she found that. She found information from an international symposium in Heidelberg, Germany, that took place in September of 1984. And that was called Future Aspects in Contraception, Proceedings of an International Symposium Held in Heidelberg, the 5th through 8th of September 1984 on female contraception. And that's a book you can find on the internet. And, you know, it was during this time that the World Health Organization was mentioned as having organized research into Gossypol as a contraceptive. And that on this book that I just mentioned, there were suggestions of feeding cottonseed oil for contraception. And actually going back to the 1930s, that cooking oil was changed from soybean to cottonseed in a Chinese province, and that there was a period of infertility that followed, and that the Rockefeller Foundation supported limited clinical trials in China and small-scale clinical trials in Brazil and Austria. The World Health Organization and Rockefeller Foundation supported animal studies to better define the mechanism of action of Gossypol, and that the National Institutes of Health was testing analogs of Gossypol for pharmaceutical efficacy in its contraceptive development branch. So again, that's going back at least to the 1930s where they've been aware of this. And then, like I said, in October of 2019, the FDA approved genetically modified cottonseed as a solution to human hunger. And the GMO cottonseed was developed at the Texas A&M AgriLife Research Center. And this, there's some other research that I mentioned in my my blog post and my video that goes more into detail about that. But it's clear that it's not good for us.
But is it
and that there's something going on here?
Let me ask you this: is it because soy, 85% of the soy in the United States is genetically modified, and a lot of this is exported to everywhere, even to Asia. And a lot of the infertility we see in Asia, even the feminization of men in that part of the world, can be attributed to soy. So with cottonseed, just like soy, if it's not genetically modified, it's not bad. Is cottonseed bad if it's organic?
It sounds like it's got the Gossypol chemical in there, okay, regardless.
So it occurs naturally?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not just GMO cottonseed. And I'm going to get into some other aspects of this here in just a minute. But I want to go through this because, you know, this definitely seems premeditated. And it may be kind of a heavy assertion, but, you know, with the Rockefeller Foundation involvement and the World Health Organization and the Gates Foundation, there's a lot of red flags waving here. And I'm looking at the slide that I have showing brands using cottonseed oil, Ritz, Arby's, Boar's Head, Betty Crocker, Pringles, Dairy Queen. Like I said earlier, I haven't really gone the next step to see, are they actually using it? But there's already been a precedent established where they're not telling us that it's in there. So even if you look, it's going to be potentially described as something else. And I was really interested when she sent me this information because it dovetailed with the research I'd already done, not only with Huey Long selling cottonseed shortening made from cottonseed oil. I found Norman Borlaug in the Statuary Hall also, and he represents the state of Iowa. And he's kind of known as the father of the Green Revolution. And his education, leading up to a PhD in plant pathology and genetics in 1942, took him to becoming employed as a microbiologist by DuPont in Wilmington between 1942 and 1944. And he was going to lead research in agricultural bactericides, fungicides, and preservatives. But because U.S. entered World War II in December of 1941, his lab was converted to conduct research for the U.S. military. So he was looking at things like corrosion-resistant glue and camouflage and canteen disinfectants, DDT to control malaria, and insulation for small electronics. But after the war, the Mexican president, Avila Camacho, who was elected in 1940, wanted to augment Mexico's industrialization and economic growth. And so the U.S. vice president at the time, Henry Wallace, thought this was beneficial to the interest of the United States and persuaded the Rockefeller Foundation to work with the Mexican government in agricultural development. And so they contacted leading agronomists who proposed the Office of Special Studies within the Mexican government to be directed by the Rockefeller Foundation and staffed by Mexican and American scientists focusing on soil development, maize and wheat production, and plant pathology. So, you know, we see the Rockefeller Foundation again. And Borlaug, Norman Borlaug, was tapped to be the head of the newly established Cooperative Wheat Research and Production Program. And he held the position as geneticist and plant pathologist starting in 1944. And then in 1964, he was made the director of the International Wheat Improvement Program at El Baton on the outskirts of Mexico City. And so he was part of what is known as CIMMYT, a long consultative group on International Agricultural Research's International Maize and Wheat Improvement Center, which was funded by the Rockefeller and Ford Foundations and the Mexican government. And among other things, Borlaug felt that pesticides like DDT had more benefits than drawbacks, advocated for their use. And he retired as director of CIMMYT in 1979, though he stayed on as a consultant. And he started teaching and doing research at Texas A&M University. So we see that again in 1984. And he was a holder of an endowed chair in agricultural biotechnology, and he advocated for the use of that as well. And then he died in 2009. So outside the city of Obregon at CIMMYT's experiment station in Mexico in Sonora, there's miles and miles of cultivated land where, you know, the land's plowed, airplanes spray pesticides on the crops, mechanical harvesters reap that, trucks carry the crops to town, and they're shipped around the world. And so that was my research that I had done and others I want to share. But that, to me, just tied right into what my viewer was sharing with me about the cottonseed oil and infertility.
I mentioned to you that my late father-in-law, his family had a lot of farms and farmland, and he was the youngest child, and he'd love to just run whenever the crop duster would be flying around and spraying all the fields. And unfortunately, he died at the age of 51 a couple of decades ago. But that's what happened. It was diagnosed that because of all he inhaled a lot of those toxins and a lot of those pesticides. So imagine what that does to the water, the water around the borders in the United States that are full of these farms everywhere. And if you take a look at the incidence of cancer, they're just off the charts, Michelle.
Mm-hmm. And looking more into Borlaug, and again, this all came out of my research for the Statuary Hall, the old Des Moines Public Library building, which was said to have been constructed in 1903, and if you look at it, it's another one of those impossibly monumental, classical-looking buildings, is the World Food Prize Hall of Laureates for the World Food Prize since 1973. And it's named after Norman Borlaug. And it's funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, the World Food Prize. And again, they make it sound good. You know, it's recognizing individuals who have advanced human development by improving the quality, quantity, and availability of food in the world. So again, they're trying to make it sound like this is all for our benefit. But as you keep going down the rabbit hole, as I do, I was looking on an alignment in Iowa, and I found power pollen in Ankeny, Iowa. And Power Pollen's mission is to preserve and enhance crop productivity by enabling superior pollination systems. And that sounds great, but when I was looking for information on Power Pollen, I encountered a press release showing that there was a commercial license agreement between Power Pollen and Bayer Pharmaceuticals that was designed to help corn seed production. And what's wrong with that picture is that Monsanto was acquired by Bayer, and it was sold for $66 billion in cash on June 7th of 2018, and Monsanto's name is no longer used. You know, so essentially the agreement between Power Pollen and Bayer is like having an agreement with Monsanto. And soybeans, like you mentioned, fall into that category. Soybeans are used in many packaged meals as a cheap protein source, like textured vegetable protein, and as a meat and dairy substitute. So GMO soybeans are getting into us that way. It's getting into us as feed for farm animals, which 70% of the soybeans grown in the United States are used for. And most of the soybeans grown in the U.S. are GMO, like you said. And on top of that, are the only GMO beans that are commercially available in the United States. You know, so again, they're putting genetically modified substances, in this case soybeans, that are hidden in our food supply chain, and they're coming to us as additives to food and in the meat of the farm animals we consume that are being fed a high soybean diet. Now, the cottonseed oil and gossypol is anti-fertility, and there's other toxic effects, but they're cumulative, so it takes place over time. But it's a very potent It's a very potent contraceptive.
In my opinion, all of this has been done. I know for a fact that Big Pharma has its tentacles all over the place. If you take a look at all these companies, I'm not going to name names, but I bet you a lot of their shareholders, through BlackRock, through Vanguard, a lot of pharmaceutical companies know, and they might be in their board of directors, they're actually creating customers for life for Big Pharma. And people say, we are what we eat. I say, we are what they eat or what they get injected with. And I mentioned, Michelle, a few times that in my previous corporate incarnation, I had very large clients. Among them was Monsanto. And I remember flying to St. Louis and walking their large hallways all the time and knowing what they did. And I wrestled with that idea. Do I say something? Am I going to get fired? Well, I left eventually, but I had suffered the consequences, health-wise, of consuming aspartame for years. And as you said, the name Monsanto has been erased after their accusation by Bayer. But you found a few interesting details about the Monsanto brothers, the Mississippi River, and some of their history. Can you share some of that with us?
Sure. And that'll lead me into some other things because it touches on what you just talked about with creating, you know, customers for Big Pharma. So I was looking at the settlement of the Mississippi River Valley as well as the Ohio River Valley where some of this stuff really just came out. And the Monsanto brothers, Benjamin and Jacob, ended up living in Natchez, Mississippi. And they were a Sephardic Jewish slave trading family originating in Spain. And Benjamin Monsanto was a slaveholder, seller, and purchased the Glenfield Plantation in 1787, which produced cotton. And I really want to get into that here in just a second. There's so much information here to unpack, Mel. It's kind of hard because there's another cotton thread here I need to go on. So a Natchez Monsanto descendant by the name of Olga Mendez Monsanto married John Francis Queeney, who founded the Monsanto Chemical Company in St. Louis in 1901 and named it after his wife's family. And the first product the Monsanto Chemical Company manufactured was saccharin, which Queeney sold to the Meyer Brothers Drug Company in St. Louis. And the dirty dozen about Monsanto, starting with one, is saccharin, PCBs, polystyrene, the atom bomb and nuclear weapons, DDT, dioxin, Agent Orange, petroleum-based fertilizer, Roundup, aspartame, bovine growth hormone, and GMOs. And before I go off into candy, I just want to talk about this other thread here because it's definitely thought-provoking. Okay, so if you look up Paradise Lost on Wikipedia, There's a section in there that talks about, that notes the spelling of the verb to die, D-I-E, in the poem referring to death as spelled D-Y-E, to die. Dyes went from being obtained from natural sources to being primarily synthetically sourced starting in the mid-1800s, which is the time frame I'm looking at when this whole new reset historical narrative and timeline got kicked off. Things were happening before then, but 1850, 1851 was when it really went into high gear. And what's really interesting is when you look at the early financial houses, Alex Brown and Sons. Alexander Brown was an Irish linen merchant who immigrated to America, and he established the first banking firm in the United States, and it later became Brown Brothers and Company, and then later became connected with the Harriman folks.
The ones that financed both sides of the war.
Yeah.
Through Prescott Bush.
So it was connected that. Yes, exactly. You got it. So he was an Irish linen merchant. You know, what's linen made of? In 1827, George Peabody arrived in Liverpool, England, to negotiate the sale of American cotton in Lancashire, among other things, by which time America's cotton was Britain's biggest import. And this became, it was turned into thread and fabrics in Britain, in Lancashire, with the advent of the Industrial Revolution, and marked the birth of the British working class. So that was around 1827. And then Nathan Mayer Rothschild, who was the son of Mayor Amschel, who went to start the House of Rothschild in London, started as a textile trading and finance. So he started in fabrics too. That's just an interesting point. Because how deep does this cottonseed rabbit hole go? You know, how long have they known that this was, you know, cumulative toxic effect? Point to ponder. I don't know. Find it to be a very interesting connection. You know, dyes, the word dye, and going to synthetic colors in fabrics. And then when did we hear that red dye number two is bad for you? I remember hearing that when I was a kid.
All these dyes and all these things, a lot of it is petroleum-based, which is synthetic. And most of our medication these days is petroleum-based, which is toxic to the body. So a lot of people just take it, and they wonder, I'm taking this for high blood pressure or for cholesterol, but that it's killing me in other ways. And when you find out that your body is designed to reject all foreign antigens, and this is why, and I'm glad that we're talking about this during part two, but this is why injections, and I want to use even in part two the word, they have to go through the muscle, because when you inhale, you use, you know, your mouth or your nose, your body has a digestive system that rejects and excretes stuff that you, it's not good for you. But when you inject it into the bloodstream, that stays there, gets into your liver, into your kidneys, and into your brain. And no wonder so many people that take medication have Parkinson's, have lower IQs, have Alzheimer's. And you wonder, why is it? Oh, they're just getting old. But nobody questions, even right now with the SADS, sudden adult death syndrome. You've seen that everywhere now. I'm sure you're researching that too, Michelle, right?
Not specifically, but I get you.
You get me, right? So every single day we hear
alternative news.
38-year-old healthy man, a coach, or a 23-year-old cheerleader from college this or university that dies suddenly of a heart attack, and doctors don't know why. I mean, do they really think we're that dense, that stupid, not to connect dots? We don't have to be rocket scientists or medical doctors to put two and two together. But there's still some people out there. I have friends that are doctors who continue saying, we just don't know. I can't believe that they're actually saying that when they went to medical school for so many years, I guess, to be brainwashed. Because if you have a bachelor's degree in chemistry or biology, you can't connect dots. You observe, you replicate, you do all the scientific method methodology in order to get into your conclusion. But it's almost like they've been lobotomized.
You know, and keep in mind, along with the other things we've been talking about, the Rockefellers were heavily involved in the American educational system. I'm not sure about other countries, but I know they were here, and you know, they've been heavily involved in a lot of the things that have happened. And so, you know, they built this education system that was primarily designed to create worker bees and not critical thinkers, and, you know, fill our heads with bunk. I mean, Henry Ford said history is more or less bunk. And if you go to look into that, it says, well, I wasn't talking about that history. I was talking about this history, but, you know, same idea. And Napoleon said history is nothing but a set of lies agreed on. I mean, they've just filled our brains with false information. And the enormity of what's taken place here is so massive. You know, who could believe that we would be lied to that extent? And dissonance is a very real thing. You know, so I don't talk to my, you know, family, friends, associates around where I live because it would be too much. You know, they're interested in the narrative.
What are
especially
they?
Living in Arizona and, you know, the old Wild West motif.
I read somewhere that if you're a step ahead, you're a genius. If you're two steps ahead, you're crazy.
It's kind of lonely, but, you know, people are starting to definitely wake up. And so I just wanted to throw that out about cotton, linen, and cloth and, you know, the role that these early financiers had in that industry. Wondering if there's a connection, wondering if this connection between dye, D-I-E and D-Y-E. And, you know, I've mentioned this is a heavily occulted system that we're living in. So just something to think about. I don't know, but, you know, is there a toxic effect even with clothing, cotton clothing is the point I want to make.
I mean, to bring this up, this is just a quick personal story since we're talking about the cotton and cotton fields. And we think of slavery as only being African, the Africans or African Americans, but we don't talk about the Irish that much. And also we don't talk about the Mexicans. I've always mentioned that I've had a restaurant for almost 25 years. The former owner, she passed away, but when she was a 16-year-old girl from, El Paso or one of these places, San Antonio, Texas, she was a cotton picker. And she used to tell me stories how she was extremely poor. And during that time, you would go to a restaurant and they had a white area and they had a Mexican area. A water faucet for Mexicans and, you know, the bus, same situation that happened with blacks, same situation that happened with the Irish, happened to the Mexicans too. So I don't know why this is not part of our history as well. But let me just ask you a question about my trip to New York, unless you have something to say about what I just said.
No, I mean, the whole slavery thing has been seeded into our consciousness. On paper, we're all slaves. I mean, the way they've set it up.
Oh, of course.
The way things have been set up, they enslaved all of us.
It's the 9-to-5 slavery now.
Yeah, not only that, but it's the, you know, all caps name versus.
Oh, yeah, you know, yeah. The corporation.
You know, like, yeah.
USA
Straw
Inc.
Man. You know, we're the collateral for the national debt. I think all of that's going to change. I really do think we're on the verge of tremendous change. But
do you?
But that's basically what they did is we were all enslaved by the system, the way they set it up with our birth certificates and everything else. You know, the deception goes so deep. So I'm just bringing that up because they wanted to enslave all of us, but there were particular groups within the new narrative that really got slammed with the slavery. And there's all the stuff that we don't even know about that's going on, human trafficking of all kinds. And what's really going on with that?
Well,
so,
then we can talk about what they call vampirism and Dracula in Romania and this thing of the lore and, you know, interview with the vampire and so on. When in reality, this could be the ancient way of extracting adrenochrome from people.
Well, that's definitely been going on, you know, especially with rituals involving young children. That is actually a drug from what I understand. a very potent drug that's sought by the elite. So there's something parasitic and non-human that's feeding on humanity, and you know, that creates the fear and creates the confusion and the chaos that they want and need in order to install their own system of control, you know, which is ultimately total control over all of us, which is ultimately total control over the creator and creation. You know, these are definitely entities with a beef against the creator and anti-life. And so I guess a big motivator for me when I first started to wake up to all of this, the whole big picture, was I have to get this out. I can't just sit on what has come to me and not do anything with it. I mean, it was a big motivator for me to start my blog and start doing the videos, because I wanted to get it back out, you know, how that we've been lied to, what the original civilization was like. And it's just led me further and further down the path of what's really been going on here.
I remember as a child, I used to take English lessons with this neighbor, and her husband was an elderly man. He was an archaeologist. And my siblings and I would take the class, and my siblings and I, I was just going to go play ball after the class. And I would say to my teacher, "Do you mind if I talk to your husband?" And I was like 6 or 7. And I never forget, he's bringing all these artifacts out and telling me about the pyramids and history and all the excavations that he was involved. And this is probably why I'm so inquisitive. And it seems like today the attention span is so short that people don't tend to ask questions. But I thought at that time, the elderly, I don't want to call them old people, the elderly, they are the ones who still keep the oral tradition in a way, all this knowledge, all this wisdom to impart upon us. And after COVID, a lot of them died. And I wonder if this is part of the, not only the depopulation agenda, but also to get rid of the people who still hold some knowledge from, say, last century or early part of the century. And they just don't want any talk about that. They just want to cut everything, just like they want to curtail anything that comes from books. They want to create digital books so that in the future, when there's a new leader, "I don't like those 3 chapters, Michelle, in those 2 books. Let's just cut it." You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So there's definitely something I want to touch on about, you know, we know what they've done. I'm going to talk a little bit more about candy and ingredients and diabetes, and then I want to kind of tie it back to something somebody commented about on one of my videos this morning. But let me talk about candy first. So, when I was following the river systems, I found Joseph Biedenharn in Vicksburg, who was a candy maker there, and that he moved to Monroe, Louisiana in 1913, and he had a candy manufacturing and Coca-Cola bottling operation. And he was like the first one to develop a network of franchise bottlers to distribute the drink. And, you know, if you look at what Coca-Cola does to you, just regular Coke, it, you know, it causes an explosion of sugar in your system and causes your blood sugar to skyrocket. And, you know, all this stuff goes on with your nervous system, with your system, after you drink a Coke. And with Diet Coke, you have similar things going on. You know, not good.
Worse.
And so it's like these things are going into our bodies that we develop, I don't know, for lack of a better word, an addiction to, or they're just everywhere. And, you know, culturally we grow up drinking them, or, and other things, candy-wise consumption. It's part of our culture. And most people know that you can dissolve a tooth with Coke. You can remove rust and you can unclog drains. And then candy has stuff in it. You know, cleaning agents like stick candy has, you can either use cream of tartar or vinegar, white vinegar. And both of those have cleaning properties for cleaning, stain removal, and so forth. And cotton candy was invented in 1897. And the one that developed the machine was a dentist. And that was first introduced at the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis, and they called it Fairy Floss. And then another dentist invented what became known as cotton candy, and he put saccharin in his, and that was starting in 1921. Tootsie Rolls came around in 1896, and they were made of things like, you know, sugar, corn syrup, palm oil, soy lecithin, artificial natural flavors, didn't melt, didn't stick together. And then that led to a whole empire of all of these candies, like, you know, Mason Dots and Junior Mints and all this other stuff. But what's all the introduction of this sugar into our system doing to us? And we have like an epidemic of diabetes going on, type 2 diabetes. And again, you just have to wonder about the intentionality of that with everything else that we're talking about.
Well, not only that, but when you think about the introduction of sugar, then we get aspartame. If you look at the history of saccharin and aspartame, how Donald Rumsfeld was the CEO of Searle, and they tried for years to try to get the FDA to approve it, and it was a no, this is rat poison. This is exactly what is rat poison. But then Reagan came along, and he was pretty much bottom, and he had some good things, but he also betrayed us with Rumsfeld being the CEO. He got the FDA to approve aspartame as part of our food supply. And ever since that happened, well, we see a lot of brain cancers. We see a lot of, I don't need to tell you, a lot of miscarriages. We've had Dr. Betty Martini here. We had an incredible interview with her. If anybody listens to this, listen to our interview to get a really, really elaborate explanation as to what it does to you, that monosodium glutamate and their excitotoxins. But you see, we're talking about our history, our hidden history, but this is all part of it, Michelle, because in the old days, if you take a look at the Bible and a lot of ancient books, it talks about how long people used to live back in those days. And it's not that they had a different way of measuring time, but some of these people lived 150, 180 years. And it seems that instead of us living longer, we live less and less and less. And after the last couple of years, I have not a prediction, but a projection that our lifespan and the birth rate and the death rate is going to completely change what anybody would have foreseen in the last 20 years.
Yeah. You know, and there's definitely a lot going on right now, a lot playing out. And that kind of goes back to what I wanted to share. I truly believe that they're not going to get away with what they've done. You know, the crimes against humanity, the creator and creation are off the charts. You know, it's not informed consent. They are lying to us to get our consent.
But they're asking for amnesty now.
Things without, you know.
Have you seen that? There is a rumor out there that they realize that the population, especially those who have gotten the shot, they're waking up to the fact that they made a mistake. So there's a rumor out there that there should be amnesty going to all the perpetrators and to anyone. I always say forgive. This time, I don't forgive. I don't forget.
And where I'm going with this is I really think that there's been a long-term plan, if you will, to take the deep state down. And I have to believe that things are being allowed to play out this way to wake more people up. I thought it was going to go a different way, but it is what it is. And I just do not think that the people that have perpetrated these crimes against humanity are going to walk away. And I had a comment from somebody that asked me, well, why do you think that? And I left a nice comment about why I believe that. And he just kind of thinks they're going to win and they have too much power, and we give them that power. They have no power unless they trick us into giving it to them. And I think it's going to get weirder before it gets better, but I do think it's going to get better. And they can't save all of us, but there's a lot more people that are going to survive it than what was originally planned by the controllers. And if they wanted 90% of the population gone, I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to definitely lose people because of the shot and all that other stuff. But I do think that the perpetrators are going to be held accountable. And so a lot of people that are awake to what's been going on just don't have that perspective. And I will stick by it. I mean, I know so much from the research that I've been doing, and I know, you know, I've just shared, you know, fingertip of what has actually been going on when you add all the genocide to it that's been taking place, even that we know about in our modern history, the famines, the civil wars, the abortions. It's overwhelming, but I absolutely believe the times that we're living in, you mentioned the age of Aquarius, people waking up, the God factor, you know, God wins, and that the lies and the deceptions of these parasitic beings are going to be revealed, and they're going to be seen for who they really are.
If you ask me where I think the culprit is, and a lot of people might not even think that this is true, but it's not only the politicians and the elite, but it's our educational system. It does not educate. It indoctrinates our children into obedient adults, order followers. And we always say we are more than they are, right? But if they're programming our children into obedient adults, order followers, you know, jab me, boost me, all those things. And, you know, look what's happening in Ukraine and Russia. Most of the people, I don't want to go there because this is another polarizing thing and has nothing to do with politics. I see people on the left and on the right just saying, push the button. Let's get this over with. I don't care if it's nuclear. I mean, at one point they were scared and they were wearing 3 masks to go out because they were so scared, but they're okay by pushing this into a nuclear Armageddon. Now that's another story. Do you think nuclear weapons are real? I'm not saying that nuclear power is not, and radiation, but do you think nuclear weapons are real, or is this done as a way to scare the population, to keep the Cold War and to keep the military-industrial complex profit-driven ability?
So like I said, I do believe that there is a plan in place to not just affect the United States, but countries around the world that have been suffering, you know, been under the same thumb, the same control, that they're working together behind the scenes, and that whatever takes place in terms of nuclear standoff or whatever else, I think that's part of getting us to where we need to be in terms of, you know, pulling the mask off the people that are really behind everything. Davos, UN, Rockefellers, Rothschilds, you know, WEF, World Economic Foundation, you know, the ones that are really pulling the strings. I think they've had to come up with basically what's a very complex scenario because they're so ingrained. You know, you mentioned the school and the indoctrination, and then you get into the transgenderism and knowing that's part of it, you know, the pushing that on children. They don't want humanity in its original organic form. They don't want that. They need us to survive. They are parasites. But in doing that, and I think that's what transhumanism is all about, and you know, kind of hook us up to machines, and they basically want our souls. And they're doing it the only way that they can, which is by tricking us and, you know, deceiving us and getting us to do it on our own. But they overreach. That's all they know how to do. They have one playbook, and they overreach, and they're arrogant, and they can't hold all the lies together. So I'm not going to go into it much because I shouldn't know things about the private lives of people like Paul Pelosi, but the story that's being told about what happened there, you know, quickly falls apart. and you know, the ones that are the most corrupt and have been gaining the most from not only selling out this country, but others as well, they just can't hold it all together. And eventually it's going to be exposed. And I think we're getting closer and closer to that time. I just think there's a heck of a lot of corruption and censorship and, you know, the truths, you know, we're living in Orwellian times. So good is bad and right is wrong. And, you know, all the other things that were never thought we would ever see happen. And I was in Office Depot the other day, and there was somebody that was wearing a costume where they had like purple hair and spiked boots and all this other stuff. And I'm thinking, okay, we're living in a day and age where we can't tell if that's a Halloween costume or the way somebody dresses.
Well, I saw a meme today that had a man coming out of his, you know, door, October 31st, Halloween, you know, hey, kids, come in, get candy. And then on November 1st, oh, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. But one day out of the year, it's okay to do it. It's like, you know, when we used to wear masks a year or two ago, you wear the mask going to a restaurant, but then you sit down and the boogeyman is not going to be, you know, taken over because you're sitting down. It's just, and people don't question those things, but this interview will be airing after the midterm elections in the United States. And I don't mean to get political here, but we know that things have become so extreme on the left that it is Marxism. It is a technocracy that's the literal definition of fascism is, as you know, the marriage of the corporation and government. Well, we are a corporation, but also with the tech tyranny in San Jose and Silicon Valley, and the information is out there that they've been colluding to basically cheat on the elections. So when this interview airs, if they cheat it again, I hate to say this, but this is when people really need to get together, whether you're left or you're right. And I know people who are on the left, but they're not as left as many others are now. If when this airs, we had cheating again, I hate to say it, but it's over. Unless we take action ourselves. And I don't mean violence at all. I mean, be able to do something peacefully, not to get a setup of what happened in D.C. in January 6th, which was all, you know, scheduled and set up. It was a trap. But look what happened in Brazil in the last few days. The people are just rising up. Why? They don't have an electoral college there. In Venezuela, they didn't have an electoral college either. And this is why they're trying to remove the electoral college from the United States, so that a small town with millions of people can basically dictate what happens to the rest of the nation. But look at Brazil. If it's a domino and they're trying to do this worldwide, create this dependency, people on their knees all the time, no jobs. Because when you are desperate, that's when you extend your hand and say, Daddy government, help me. But we're not going to let that happen, because as I've always said, I would rather live on my, what's the saying? Die standing than living on my knees. That's never going to happen.
Me too. But I'm actually really quite optimistic that even if what you say comes to pass, then there's definitely a possibility there. I'm sure they're going to try. And we both live in Arizona and we know what's going on there.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you don't live in Arizona, then you know that the Democratic candidate that is also the Secretary of State.
Not to be selfish or conceited, but not only all the states are watching us, the whole world is watching what's happening in this state of Arizona.
Yep. So, but even if that were to pass, and again, as an Arizonan, I know how popular the Republican candidate is, and I know how unpopular the Democratic candidate is. I think things are coming to a head, but I really, really, with all my heart, do not believe that these criminals are going to get away with it. And it may take a little bit to see that play out, but I just, you know, horrendous things have taken place here, are taking place. And, you know, we'll just see what happens. But I think, since it's going to be after the midterms, if that is what happens, I would just give it a little bit of time and say, okay, what's going to happen from here? Because it may be what people need to, like you say, really get involved and take action.
And as you know, they want a civil war. They want a civil war, a kinetic civil war, so they can clamp down, issue martial law, declare martial law.
But if they do, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a bad thing if the bad guys are behind it, but it's a good thing if the good guys are behind it. If the civilian, courts and all of that are too corrupt to get anything done, It'll just be interesting to see how it plays out. And I think it's probably a good time just to kind of stay open to what happens. I would definitely like to see this system that we've been talking about go down in flames.
Do you think that in our lifetime we'll be able to see our true history? Because as I've said, this is probably on top of my agenda, discovering who we truly are. Because if you don't know who we are, we don't know where we're going. And we continue making the same mistakes. But it's very interesting looking at these buildings and these statues. And I can't even fathom seeing a human being. And I'm not trying to take credit away from our great craftsmen and artisans that we have. But something tells me that some kind of different technology, the equivalent of a 3D printer, was used in the past to use cymatics and sound and water and lasers to do all these things. I mean, you've seen all these places in India where there's the floor and there's a hole in the floor and this magnificent building underneath. You probably have seen those, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely seen some wondrous things in many different places all over the earth. And hopefully by the end of the week, we'll see. I've got tomorrow morning where I can put some time into it. And I'm finishing up a blog post. It's going to be a video also. And I'm looking at the Hudson River Valley in eastern New York and the upper and lower New York Bays, which I've already researched the upper and lower New York Bays. But the title of it will be Star Forts and Gone By Trolley Parks in New York's Hudson River Valley and New York Bays. Star Forts were not military. They were part of the circuitry of the grid. And this part of eastern New York has been a powerhouse because not only were there a lot of historical star forts, there's a lot that aren't there anymore. But the trolley parks, the amusement parks, were there also, side by side with the star forts. And it goes on down the Hudson River, you know, through Manhattan, New Jersey, on into the bays. And there's like 8 star forts that I knew about from research a couple of years ago in the New York bays. And now I've just got a whole long line of them. But the point is that there were these tremendous amusement parks that had trolley lines connected to them. They were terminuses of the trolley lines. And all of these parks are gone. Okay. And one of them's even was a nuclear power plant up until a couple of years ago. So it was a amusement park, and then it was turned into a nuclear power plant that powered 25% of New York City's electricity.
I mentioned to you how I was in New York a few weeks ago, and I saw the Statue of Liberty again, and it's on top of a star fort. And I'm, you know, I had a guide, and I asked him the question, why is it on top of a star fort? Oh, well, that this area used to be for, you know, to defend the port of New York and the area of New York from the Dutch, but they never came. And then I said, what about Ellis Island over there? Why that Moorish architecture that seems to be out of place in time? And he said, well, Mr. Ellis, who used to own the building before it became an immigration point, he said, it used to be a pub. But yeah, it's a Moorish architecture. That's all he could say. Why do you think that is?
I think it is because it was built by the Moors.
By the Moors. There you go.
That, you know, again, we haven't been told the truth at all about this civilization, and that the word Moor refers to ancient Mu or Lemuria, and that was the ancient advanced civilization that was worldwide and built all of the infrastructure.
Even the Empire State Building, Michelle. The Empire State Building.
Absolutely. I've done a lot of research on how so many different things line up. I mean, there's a bridge in, it's one of called Dumbo is the name of the bridge. I'm sorry. I'm trying to pull things up from memory.
You mean in New York? Dumbo, Brooklyn Bridge, you mean?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
The Dumbo Brooklyn Bridge. And if you pull up a picture of it, you can perfectly see what I believe is the Empire State Building framed through the lower part of that bridge. Yeah, there it is, Manhattan Bridge. So you can see this building framed perfectly through the base of this bridge.
I see it.
Well, that's not an isolated example. This civilization was like perfectly lined up with everything. But it's just stunning. I mean, it's a perfect view of this. It's either the Chrysler Building or the Empire State Building. I get the two confused. I'm looking at pictures of it, and I've used that as examples. So this civilization.
Yeah, that's the Empire State Building. It is the Empire State Building.
You know, exactly, perfectly in alignment with each other. Through archways, the base of the Eiffel Tower in Paris frames the military school in Paris, same way. And those are just two examples of countless examples that I found of that.
Well,
wasn't randomly built.
We are the mudhood dwellers who think that that's too, the beauty of those buildings is not practical anymore. And even though 70% of people and architects always say they prefer the old ornate buildings, we are still producing all these court buildings and federal buildings that look like a square, very modern, but they have nothing. You look at them and they don't touch your heart. When you look at these buildings, I always say they were made by people who love us. The others, you look at these huge apartment complexes now, especially the public ones in Asia and here, those people don't love us. But give us your last nugget of wisdom, Michelle, until we talk again.
You know, I just really encourage everybody just to, you can start in your own community, walk out your door, look for random large megalithic stones in parks, you know, sidewalks, businesses. You can find them around Starbucks a lot of times. You know, look at your rivers, creeks, and see if they look like canals. Rivers, nearby rivers, masonry banks, that kind of thing. The older buildings in your community, see if when they were said to have been built actually makes sense. And again, there's a lot of buildings in the United States that were said to have been built as part of New Deal programs during the Depression that are just incredible buildings. And a lot of like WPA and CCC and other three-letter New Deal agencies are given credit for building things way beyond anything that we should have been capable of during that time. And just start questioning the narrative, because it really truly does fall apart when you start to look at what they tell us about things. And if you do that, you can start seeing things differently.
And as a lot of people say, if you start mentioning all of this, they say, who cares? Who cares if it was made by this or that? And this is why you have to explain to them. When our history is rewritten for you, then you don't know what your potential is. And I think the biggest conspiracy of all is the secret to our own potential. If we were able to create these magnificent, beautiful, ornate buildings hundreds of years ago, imagine what we could do today if we still had that technology and energy from the ether. And if you give free energy to the entire world, we become limitless. And of course, they can't do that. They have to meter it. They have to charge us. They have to enslave us. But we are more than they are. And I don't mean to sound like a downer when I mention about the politics and the elections. But Michelle is right. We are more than they are. We are the cusp of something happening. Perhaps this is the moment. It is darkest before dawn.
Right. It's exactly. Yeah. And what I'm seeing, we did have free energy. We had a beautiful system. We had a fun system, which is where I was going with the amusement parks that are long gone in New York. I had fun. There was abundance. We were together and harmonious, and So it's not something we're going to, it's something we were at and we're going to go back to. And don't ask me how, but this is part of the awakening that's taking place right now. And I'm not the only researcher doing this work. So there's a lot of people that are not only, you know, looking at the mud flood and questioning the narrative, but I know a lot of people have been inspired to start their own YouTube channels and do their own stuff.
And it's not,
so
not
it's
only,
kind of a real grassroots thing.
It's not only Tartaria, but there's Bohemia, there's Hyperborea, and many other aspects. If you look at old maps, not only one, but when you see many maps showing the same areas of the world that were populated, especially the Sinai Peninsula, North Africa, where Egypt is, that used to be populated, and all of a sudden, boom, it became a desert. It makes you wonder if the population that was in that area, what we might deem the cradle of civilization, was wiped out so that all those, the wisdom and the knowledge disappeared with them. But Michelle, once again, how can people learn more about your work, your books, and so on?
Okay, so my website is piercingtheveilofillusion.com. You can go to the website buythisbooktoday.com and find two ebooks under published author that I have. And then my YouTube channel is Michelle Gibson. And if you type Moores in, you can find me. It pops right up. It might pop up anyway, but that kind of gets you to me quicker.
Michelle Gibson, historical detective. Once again, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're very welcome, Mel. Thanks again for the invitation.
You too. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
Bye. And that was Michelle Gibson with more historical detective work. Many of you have been captivated by this topic as much as I am. So we'll continue. As always, I want to thank you, Larry Desmember, for paving your truth journey another week. And tonight, I leave you with a quote by Milan Kundera. The first step in liquidating a people is to erase its memory, destroy its books, its culture, its history. Then have someone write new books, manufacture a new culture, invent a new history. Before long, a nation will begin to forget what it is and what it was. Thanks for listening. I'm Mel Hostelrich. Until next week, be well.